Welcome back to another season of Off the Bench from the Premier League. Every week, two experts will be here to discuss what happened in the game week and how that can inform our future decisions. I'm FPL Harry.
And I'm Oscar, FPL Focal.
Well, Oscar, we've spent all summer building up to the first week. We spent all that time planning and hopefully picking the best players. But the real question is, after 1 week, do we think we did? How did game week one go for you?
I'm actually pleased with how it went. Like, considering there was 615,000 chips played as well, I finished on 60 points all out. Yeah, the three highlights for me, number one, I had double Spurs defence. So I was really relieved about that clean sheet. I went for Sanchez, who ended up with 8 points. He got a really late bonus point after that recalculation. And I had Reinders as well, who got that 10-point hauler on his debut. I'd gone back and forth on like Anderson. You know, we've got these new defensive contributions to think about. Anderson, 5.5 mil, or Reinders for the attacking upside. Like, both were amazing, to be fair. But yeah, I'm happy to have landed on Reinders, who's risen in price as well. Yeah, how did you get on?
Yeah, I have very similar returns, although I didn't have double Spurs defence in the end. I actually went for Anderson of Fulham as I was trying to chase some of those defensive contributions for the start of the season. And I'm still happy with that as a strategy, although I actually didn't have a single player in my 15 squad to hit any of their defensive contribution targets in game week one. So I'm hoping it gets better as the week goes on. I also went with Sanchez, pretty happy with that. Although as a Chelsea fan with double Chelsea attack in Palmer and João Pedro, I didn't see quite what I wanted to see from us going forward. And as like you, I was looking at that 5.5 million spot. I also had Kieran Drewsbury-Hall in there at times. I had Anderson in for a lot of preseason. But as things got closer and we saw Reinders score twice during that final preseason game, he did come in. And now looking at the way he played in game week one, I have to say I'm feeling quite happy and quite smug that I went with him in the end.
And it was late drama. It was a good start to the season with that first game. Obviously, we met up for it, and Salah with the really, really late goal in that Liverpool-Bournemouth game. Should we start with that one?
Well, exactly. I think a lot of us with the Salah in our team and with him as captain as well, our points would be looking very different if it wasn't for the last couple of minutes. But I think the real thing is how many times have we seen Mo Salah do that over the years? How many times has he added an extra return on in stoppage time or in the final 5 minutes? Or how many times has he been looking like he's going to blank? And then once the game looks like it's over, once everyone else is, you know, a little bit tired, Mo Salah just finds that breakaway from, you know, a set piece or from a corner, and Alisson's thumping it downfield and Mo Salah is there. He did it once again to bail us out a little bit. But I think there are so many takeaways from this game that don't revolve around Mo Salah. I think the other Liverpool attackers in particular, in Ekotike, in Wirtz, and in Cody Gakpo as well, all looked really impressive for different reasons. And it was Ekotike that really came away with the points, as well as Cody Gakpo. Neither of us went on any other Liverpool. And I have to say that game was a little bit stressful of a watch without any of them in our team, because they look like they're going to score an awful lot of goals this season. Did any of those three particularly take your fancy over the others?
Yeah, I was really, just on Salah actually, I was also going to mention he's never blanked in game week one still, which is just such an unbelievable record. Neither of us, me or you, went for Wirtz. So we were kind of like really hoping for Wirtz to blank. Obviously big new signing, high ownership. So that was a little bit of a stress watch. But yeah, Ekotike was brilliant, I thought. He really impressed me. And I didn't go there. Like, fair play if any of you listening did. For me, it was like, I want to wait and see how the Isak situation sort of shakes out. Does he go there or not? But yeah, I think he's risen in price as well. He looked really sharp. Obviously, he looked good in pre-season as well. He was the main one that impressed me. Van Dijk hit the defensive contributions threshold. He actually got 21 contributions, I believe it was, which was more than literally any player in game week one. So that's kind of what we expected from Van Dijk. It's 10 DCs required for a defender. What have you been calling it? DCs, DEFCONs, defensive contributions? What have you landed on?
I'm just straight in for DEFCON, because defensive contributions feels like a tongue twister, but it's probably the most clear is defensive contributions.
So it's 10 a defender needs to get plus 2 points, and it's 12 for midfielders. So yeah, he comfortably did that. So plus two, but obviously no clean sheet, of course, because of the Semenyo brace. What do you think of Semenyo?
Yeah, Semenyo is one of those players that I've always struggled to... I owned at times last year, because I feel he can have absolutely incredible games like this. And then when I decide to bring him in, he never seems to continue it. But if you look at those Bournemouth fixtures for the next few weeks, right? Wolves at home, Spurs away, Brighton at home, Newcastle at home, and Leeds away. Bournemouth are one of those teams, and there's a few of them which we'll talk about when you look at it, like Crystal Palace are the same and Wolves are the same, that there wasn't much investment in them in game week one because of their opening fixture, despite how good some of their fixtures might look a few weeks down the line. And Bournemouth was the same, right? They went away to Liverpool. You don't want to get off on the wrong foot. So a lot of people thought, well, Liverpool will win this game. We don't need to invest in Bournemouth very much. And to be honest, outside of Semenyo, that was true, right? There weren't very many returns elsewhere for them. But Semenyo looked incredible in that game. And I look at it now, I've got a Morgan Rogers in my team who blanked in game week one and is exactly the same price. And I'm looking at it thinking, well, those upcoming run of fixtures for Bournemouth look really nice. So I was really impressed with him. You still have the addition of someone like a Kluivert when he's going to return, who was very popular for us last year, although it doesn't look like it's going to be imminent for him. You've got Evan Nilsson if you need it in the forward line, but Semenyo looks like he's the one who straight away wants to hit the ground running and put his name in the hat to be in our teams.
Yeah, I was trying to sort of look past bad Game Week 1 fixtures because obviously, especially when you're picking your Game Week 1 team, and the same applies when you're wildcard and you're looking for the long term. Like if we'd flipped Bournemouth's fixtures, let's say it was a Wolves home, Spurs away, Brighton home, and then it was the Liverpool game, I feel like it would have been much more highly owned. So yeah, I had Bruno in my Game Week 1 team. Obviously, he had Arsenal, difficult game. I had Strand Larsen, he had Man City, but I'm kind of looking for the long term. But yeah, last season, only Salah with five more and Palmer with one more took more shots than Semenyo last season. That's how much he shoots. And if he's been improving on his finishing, practicing that and so on, he could be a really nice pick this season. It's been 3 years since someone managed a brace or better at Anfield, and that was Trossard when he got a hat-trick, and that was when he was still at Brighton.
Wow, yeah, I agree. Like, if he can start to finish the chances that he gets. He was the second biggest overperformer for XG this weekend with two goals from 0.91. But yeah, very impressive. And he's absolutely one I'm going to keep an eye on for the next few weeks because his price is only going to go up and up if he continues to do something like that. I think the other takeaway from this game is the Liverpool fullbacks, Kerkez and Frimpong, in their first game for Liverpool, getting the dreaded 59th minute sub. And not only the 59th minute sub, if they'd have played about 30 seconds more, it would have been a clean sheet for them.
You can't write it, can you, on the first game of the season?
Well, exactly. And they would have had a clean sheet that then got wiped later for the rest of the defenders. And suddenly you'd be looking at those two thinking they're, you know, better picks than some of the others. So Frimpong apparently felt his hamstring in that game, which is why he was taken off early and they went with putting Endo in at right back. That's one to keep an eye on. If you do own him, we'll have a press conference later on the week where I'm sure Arnie Slot will tell us how exactly Frimpong is feeling. But before that, I was very impressed with how advanced Frimpong was playing. And if he is available and if he is still, you know, fit, then I do still like him as a pick. I know Van Dijk hit the DEFCON, and that is going to be the big talking point of this season, right? I think Van Dijk versus Frimpong completely highlights the DEFCON versus the defensive contribution versus attacking threat debate that we're going to have, because Van Dijk, no clean sheet, no attacking return for Frimpong, so Van Dijk looks great. But as soon as, you know, Frimpong gets that attacking return, we're all going to think that is what we should be owning. So at the moment, do you still favour Van Dijk, partly because of the minutes that we saw in game week one?
Yeah, that's it. Like, when I'm going with my game week one draft, it's just all about who can I trust, who's definitely not going to become a problem, at least in terms of minutes. So yeah, I would have had Van Dijk or no one, but I didn't even go with him. I just feel like the Liverpool defence might need a bit of time to settle with some changes, obviously in either flank and fullback. Frimpong, like if Bradley ends up, I can't remember, he wasn't in the squad, was he? I don't think he was in the squad at all. If he's out for a while, I think Frimpong's amazing. Otherwise, I'm just not going to go there. And I think that's going to be the story throughout the season. Like, the fullbacks are going to need those attacking returns. It's the same story with Bournemouth. Senesi hit 15 defensive contributions, so he did get the plus two at least. Whereas, you know, Traffer, who's the Kerkez replacement, he didn't. Senesi, he got 9.4 defensive contributions per 90 last season. So I think he's quite a nice option for 4.5 mil.
Yeah, I'm looking at that Bournemouth defence. And I think if you were on a free hit this week, someone like Petrovic, someone like Senesi, someone like Traffer would definitely be in my consideration if you're looking to play that chip into the second week. Let's move on to Saturday now. With Wirtz blanking, I was hoping that my Aston Villa players might come in and make them the worthwhile picks for game week one. But unfortunately, they created less XG than any team in the league with just 0.2. Really struggled to create any chances against a Newcastle side who looked pretty sluggish during most of preseason. And we thought actually that this game week one fixture was a little bit better on in reality for Aston Villa than maybe it looked on paper going into this game. But Newcastle, their midfield really dominated this game. Aston Villa really struggled to create enough chances. And then, of course, we had the late Konsa red card. So I went with Rodgers and I went with Watkins. And I'm not panicking. They've got Brentford, Crystal Palace, Everton, Sunderland in their next four games. And I expect Villa to score goals over the course of the season. And just because they blanked in game week one, it's not the end of the world, given some of their counterparts that I could have picked also blanked. But it was definitely not the performance I expected to see from Aston Villa in game week one.
Yeah, Konsa red card. I mean, he did get the clean sheet at least. So I think he actually outscored Watkins, funnily enough. He was in about 2 million teams. So yeah, that's a brutal start to the season. And yes, Brentford game week two as well. Would you keep hold or would you be looking to sell if you had him?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to use my defensive my first transfer of the season on a defender. And he's only suspended for one game as it's a last man tackle. So I would probably be looking to hold on to him. The fixtures for Villa from game week three onwards looked nice. They looked pretty solid defensively, although a couple of the biggest XG underperformers for the game week were both from Newcastle and Alanga and Gordon in second and third. And interestingly, number one underperformer was Van de Ven. Anyone went with the cheap Spurs defender can feel a little bit hard done by that he didn't get any attacking return. So maybe the Villa clean sheet was a little bit fortunate, particularly Alanga had a big chance. And we'll talk about Newcastle in a moment. But I think if you've got Villa players, even if it's Konsa or if it's one of the attackers, I would still be looking to hold on to them. They're still good picks and they've been good picks for a while. That just a blank against Newcastle doesn't particularly change that. Newcastle are interesting. I particularly got a keen eye on Anthony Gordon because if Alexander Isak is to make that move, at the moment he is likely to be their number nine and penalty taker and on some set pieces. And although the fixture they've got this week up against Liverpool isn't ideal, it's then Liverpool, Wolves, Bournemouth in the three after that. So at 7.5, I am keeping a close eye on Anthony Gordon.
I imagine they're going to sign at least one striker, right? Because they've got Europe as well. But that's what puts me off a bit. And I actually think he's better on the wing. And then when he's on the wing, he's got Barnes for competition. I mean, 0.2 expected goals conceded. Really, really impressive. And it's got me wondering about captaincy as well, you know, because of course Salah's got Newcastle away. Palmer has got a better fixture. He's got West Ham away. Obviously, Haaland's home to Spurs. Saka, if you've got him, Leeds home looks so obvious. But yeah, the defenders, I'm kind of interested in, you know, someone like a Burn perhaps in game week three. Like you said, it's Leeds away, then it's Wolves home back to back, then it's Bournemouth away. Really nice fixtures. So Burn and Livramento for 5 mil look like great options with those fixtures. So yeah, no Isak for Newcastle. Newcastle failed to win any of their last six Premier League games without Isak. They've drawn four and lost two, and they failed to score in each of their last four, despite having 75 shots, 9.4 expected goals. So, for right now, I'm just completely put off by the Newcastle attack at all. But if Isak does leave, we'll have to see who comes in and how they look.
Yeah, that's probably fair. They are linked with a few forwards. And of course, the transfer window is open for a couple more weeks, which is always interesting for our FPL teams at the start of the season, trying to build a game week one team, which is not going to be impacted by any transfers over the next couple of weeks. It's always difficult. I agree on Dan Burn. He hit defensive contributions in that game, plus picking up a bonus point as well. So once those fixtures turn, even if they're not scoring goals, someone like a Dan Burn could be of some interest. Going into those 3 o'clock games, we've mentioned Spurs a little bit. They were the second highest creators of XG in the game week with 2.3, only behind Manchester City. A 3-0 win over Burnley, keeping a clean sheet as well. Their defenders have started to become quite popular, whether you went with Van de Ven, whether you went with Romero, whether you went with Vicario or Pedro Porro like I did. I think defensively, they've already shown that they look like they're going to be more solid than they were last year. And that's where a lot of the investment now is. But Richarlison scored twice. Kudus picking up two assists. We do expect Dominic Solanke to come back into that team as well. How are you feeling on Spurs? Because of course, although they look great in game week one, they now have Manchester City in game week two. So it might not be the best time to go and buy them.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big takeaway of FPL in general. Don't go points chasing. Like, the best fixture for a while is out of the way. They've got Leeds away in game week seven. The fixtures aren't actually that bad after Man City, but I definitely wouldn't be buying this week, and I definitely wouldn't be going anywhere near Richarlison, despite the brace. Because, yeah, as you say, Solanke's in the picture. It could be Richarlison starts again, comes off early, or it could be a matter of time until Solanke's the one starting again. But yeah, Kudu's really solid debut, double assist. yeah, as I said, I've got double Spurs defence, so both of them go immediately to my bench. I'm wondering about game week two, because obviously Spurs are all over Burnley, and I've got Dubravka and I've got Estev, so I've got double Burnley defence in my team, and I'm thinking, do I want to start them both for, is it Sunderland home, game week two? Or do I go and hedge my bets with Sanchez, who's got West Ham away, perhaps? Where are you on that? Have you got double defence, Burnley?
Yeah, so I've got Dubravka and Estev as well. And at the moment, I've got Dubravka on the bench and Estev in my starting lineup. I'm also actually planning on starting Pedro Porro going into game week two, because although I do expect Manchester City to score, we saw in preseason when they played against PSG that Spurs actually played a back five, and we might see that. I wonder if we'll see that from Thomas Frank in that game, because if you remember at Burnley, he often did it in slightly more difficult games. He'd opt for that back five with a sort of front two, and you know, Brian Mbeumo would end up going playing up front when he was at Brentford, and that might benefit someone like Akudos as well, because instead of being on the wing where his creative threat was great, he picked up two assists, but I didn't see that much goal threat from him. But it might be in a game like this where actually Akudos ends up playing more central, he plays sort of alongside Richarlison or Solanke, and there's a little bit more goal threat from him. And it would benefit someone like a Pedro Porro, who might end up playing, you know, bombing down that right-hand side, playing right wing back, and maybe having a little bit more attacking threat than we saw in game week one. But I think Burnley were the team coming up from the Championship. Of course, they kept all those clean sheets. They had that great record, but a little bit of a crash back to reality for them and for us owning their defenders, that it's not going to be quite as straightforward this year. And I agree, I've got a couple of them. And although I'm starting one against Sunderland in game week two, we can move to that game now. Sunderland were probably the biggest surprise package going into the start of the season. Now, they did massively overperform. They scored three goals from 0.7 XG. But if you just watch that game, Sunderland looked great. They looked like they want to score goals. They looked defensively pretty solid. They didn't allow West Ham very much. But going forward, they definitely look like they want to score goals, which, as you say, does concern me a little bit for my Burnley defenders.
And Ballard, king of the game week with 17 points, I believe it was, and three managers in the world triple captain him. I think they need investigating. Like, there must be time travelers or something to get 51 points triple captain him, Ballard, in game week one. He is now the highest scoring defender in game week one FPL history, or since they started recording the stats in 2010. The only players that ever scored more points in game week one is Sterling, Salah and Bruno, that all got 20 points in game week one going back a few years. I don't suppose anyone listening might have him, maybe one or two. Fair play if you had him in your team. This was my fear, like going with a West Ham defender. Like, if they don't get that clean sheet in game week one, the fixtures just aren't so good afterwards. Like, Juve in particular does look super attacking, like he's got returns in him. But yeah, a lot of people went Wan-Bissaka. He might have even been the highest owned defender, or if not top three. And it was Hermansson that started in goal as well over Areola.
Yeah, I agree with you on West Ham. And I had the same thought process, right? That after Sunderland, it's Chelsea, Forest, Spurs, Palace, Everton, Arsenal. That if they didn't perform the way you wanted them to in game week one, you're going to be faced with a little bit of a headache. I mean, I did expect them to do better than they did in game week one. And Diouf actually had a shot cleared basically off the line early on by one of their defenders, which if that goes in, it would have been a full Krog assist, and suddenly things look very, very different. But I agree. Now, if you're sat there with, you know, a Jared Bowen at 8 million, a full Krog at 6 million, or one of their defenders, looking at those upcoming fixtures and the way that they performed in game week one, I would be, you know, I feel pretty concerned about having them in my team, I think, at the moment. Hermansson, as you said, came in, played in goal. He was one I'd had an eye on. I just was a little bit uncertain exactly who was going to start in goal for them straight at the beginning of the season, because it could have been Areola as Hermansson joined late. But I have to say, I feel pretty happy that I've got some players in my team that I might not be completely thrilled with after the first week. But I have to say, I'm quite happy I don't have any West Ham players sat there at the moment.
For anyone that doesn't know, Harry's going for, is it a sixth top 10K in a row? Fifth?
Well, let's hope so. Although currently at 4.5 million after game week one, we're off to not off to the best of starts.
What I was going to say is, I'm glad like we're agreeing on a lot, because we often don't, but that's got to be a good sign. Like what you're saying about thinking of starting Sanchez over Dubravka, and like your initial thoughts on the West Ham defenders and assets and so on. So I'm pleased with that. I'll take that. Talking of six mil forwards, obviously that's Fulcrum, but there's not many places you can go from there. There is Thiago, who scored for Brentford from the penalty spot. Mm. Should we go to the Forest v Brentford game next?
Yeah, of course. I think the other one at that price who we can go to after is Strand Larsen.
Yes.
But Thiago did score for Brentford. He took the penalty. I would say they didn't create very much in my eyes outside of that. But that is the benefit to having a penalty taking forward, right? Because if you don't have a team that creates much, but they get a penalty and you're on them, you can have a route to points even in a slightly quieter game. This was really the Nottingham Forest show. And I think their pre-season form, where they only scored one goal in seven games, meaning that I didn't opt for Chris Wood in game week one, is just another reminder of why pre-season form needs to be taken with a little bit of a pinch of salt. Yeah. Because they ended up not keeping a clean sheet, despite keeping 5 out of 7 in pre-season, and ended up scoring 3 goals in their first game. A complete flip of what we all expected, whether you've gone with one Forest defender, 2 or 3 of them, which I've seen flying around as well. It really was the Chris Wood, but also the Elliot Anderson show. The 5.5 darling that we've seen throughout preseason, he actually missed defensive contribution points by just 1, but he did pick up an assist and he was just running that game for them. He was very, very good. So if you've got him and you're looking to move sideways to Reinders, which is a popular move, I would probably be holding firm on Anderson and finding another route to Reinders if you want him. Yeah. So I was very impressed.
Yeah, fully agree. And I actually kind of regret not going with both. They both look such unbelievable value for 5.5 mil. He was taking corners, Anderson. I think it was the first goal. It was an Anderson corner and it looped into the box, but it took 2 little defensive touches before it was buried, which means, as per the rules, that wasn't an Anderson assist. He was on free kicks as well. There was one he took that hit a hand, but it wasn't given, would have been a penalty, but he got a brilliant assist as well for Wood's second. It was like a perfectly curved through ball, struck first time. But yeah, Brentford, they could have a really difficult season ahead of them. It's obviously a small sample size of one, but when you think about the goal involvements that have been lost between Mbeumo, probably Wissa, obviously losing captain Norgaard plus Frank gone, there could be a team to target. And going back to what you said earlier, I'm not at all worried about Rodgers and Watkins blanking Gemic 1 because they've got Brentford next. So I'm still taking encouragement from that. And I'm definitely going to stay patient with my Villa assets for now, given the fixtures.
Yeah, I agree. I think Villa going into game week 2 is a team that I'm absolutely happy to have. And, you know, the fixtures after are good. But yeah, Brentford feel like a team that they could look to target. And we saw that from Forest. Chris Wood, let's talk about him a little bit because he was one of the, you know, big overperformers. He only had 0.5 XG and Chris Wood scored twice. I feel like we say that every single game he plays. And it's fantastic when you're on the right side of it and you own him and people are complaining that he's overperformed. But that's what he does, right? He gets a couple of big chances and he'll put them away. And we saw that again in the start of this season. They are just a team which are drilled to create chances for him. And with the upcoming fixtures, I'm sitting here with someone like a João Pedro in my team wondering how wrong I've maybe got this decision. But I feel like there needs to be a little bit of caution with Nottingham Forest as well. Maybe like we're talking positively about someone like an Aston Villa. Nottingham Forest now go away to Crystal Palace, a team that I saw firsthand as a Chelsea fan defend very well in game week 1, that I don't think will allow quite the level of chances to be allowed against them in game week 2 against Forest as maybe Brentford did. So although Forest looked great in game week 1, they go Palace away. West Ham at home is quite good in game week 3, but yeah, then Arsenal away. So yeah, Palace away and Arsenal away in the next 2 of the next 3 would just put the brakes on a little bit. If you want to go and buy Chris Wood, he's going to score goals. Now, after that, they've got Burnley and Sunderland as well. But this week, I expect Palace to be a little bit more of a tougher test.
But yeah, game week 5 and 6, they've got Burnley away, Sunderland home back to back. And you're in a slightly better spot in a way, although João Pedro blanked, because you've got Watkins and João Pedro. So you've got that price point where there's that potential move from João Pedro over to Wood. I don't know if that's what you're considering, but that's quite an easy option for you. Maybe not based on price changes. I think Wood has risen, but I'm on Strand Larsen and Watkins myself. So that's a bit more difficult because I'm going to have to find 1 million from somewhere in my team. And that's going to be 2 transfers at least to get there. So yeah. And the other thing is I can't go Watkins to Wood because in game week 5, Villa have got Sunderland themselves and they've got Burnley in game week 7. So there is a really nice patch of fixtures there between Villa and Forest that I'm hoping to find a way to capitalize on.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Talking of Strand Larsen, although they didn't score, I was very impressed with him in game week one. Mm. And he looks like the pick of the bunch for the cheap forwards if I was going out and buying one at the moment. Because the Wolves fixtures after that Manchester City game start to look pretty good. They play a Bournemouth team, of course, without some of their defenders. Then they go up against Everton, then Newcastle, then Leeds in their next four. So I've got a Wolves defender in Agbadou just because his defensive contribution numbers are quite good and there are a couple of games in there that I can look to play. But before we talk about Manchester City, although they lost 4-0, I actually was quite impressed with Wolves in game week one. And I think there are some players in that team that will be good assets, particularly Strand Larsen.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have him. I've got a soft spot for him. I had him last season when he was 5.5 million, but he dropped down in price even, and he did really well. I think he got 14 goals last season. I agree with you. I think he's probably the best bet of the 6.5 mils. And if you haven't got him, potentially look at him from game week five, because they got Leeds home, Tottenham away, Brighton home, Sunderland away, and Burnley home. So they play the three promoted teams over five game weeks. And he's only 6.5 million. Cunha's gone. He's the focal point of the attack. It's all about the service to him. So I think he could be a gem this season. And I was encouraged by his performance, despite no goals from him or Wolves in general.
Yeah, I agree. If I'm looking for a cheap forward, that's where I'm going. It just felt like they were drilled, a bit like Forrest are creating chances for Chris Wood. I felt like we saw a very similar thing with them just trying to create chances for their forward. A forward that did get an awful lot of chances. Have we already got the Erling Haaland regret, the Erling Haaland early season fear, the highest XG of any player with 1.99 in game week one on his own? Manchester City top for XG overall with just 2.47. So only half an XG was created in that game that didn't fall to Erling Haaland for Manchester City. But it's really Reinders that is getting a lot of the attention. I think it's those two that we'll talk about. Ait Nouri also picking up defensive contribution points plus a clean sheet. There are assets all over this team which are becoming very popular very quickly.
Yeah, Haaland brace. Like, are we going to see a repeat of last season where he banged in 10 goals in that first five game weeks and he looked essential, and then obviously it was the Salah season? Haaland's scored in each of his last four game week one appearances in the Premier League. Only Salah, who did it in six successive seasons from 2017 to 2022, has enjoyed a longer run in the competition's history. But yeah, Reinders kind of stole the show for me. Absolutely class debut. For me, he looks like easily their most progressive midfielder. He can sort of do it all. He was the first price riser of the season, along with Semenyo and Ekotike. Really happy I went for him. He looks brilliant. But yeah, Ait Nouri, he grew into the game. As you say, he got the defensive contributions. And I think he was the only Man City player that managed it, surprisingly, even though we tend to expect that from the centre-backs. Do you have any concerns still on his minutes longer term, or do you think he was a brilliant choice after all from game week one?
I think he might end up being a brilliant choice after all. I would look at their fixtures from game week two and Spurs, Brighton, Man United, Arsenal in the next four and think I don't expect as many points from him in those as maybe we saw. I think what was quite interesting though, and the reason he looks like he's hit defensive contributions here, is City didn't opt for their all-out fullback going forward attacking like we've seen from Guardiola in previous seasons. He actually decided to invert them a little bit, which we have seen from Manchester City in the past. And that meant that Ait Nouri was sort of playing central midfield and he was sort of all over the pitch at times. And that's why he ended up, because the number of sort of ball recoveries that he was making as a result was very, very strong. And actually, if he's just playing as an attacking fullback, you're probably not going to get that from him quite as much. So you lose the attacking threat if he plays that role, and it might change once Rodri comes back into the team and he trusts Rodri a little bit more. But his attacking threat will be there when he plays that. And if he doesn't, the defensive contributions are going to be very strong. So yeah, I like him. I didn't go with any 6 million options, but I'm just hoping that the next four fixtures don't go quite as smoothly for them as it did in game week one. And similarly, because I have Erling Haaland and I don't really have a route to buy him at the moment.
Yeah, it was a slightly different tactical setup from Pep from what we saw last season. Like, at times, Ait Nouri was tucking in as the back three and Rico Lewis was the one getting the chance to go forward. And obviously, he got the two assists, which reflected that. And I just think that tucking into a back three is something that suits Vardy or more. So I'm going to wait and see. And yeah, we've got the benefit of some fixtures that you can probably just wait and see how City get on. And then perhaps look again towards the City defenders game week six. They've got Burnley home, they're Brentford away, Everton home. So yeah, I'm going to wait and see for now on the City defenders. Because of course, Vardy, he wasn't in the squad, but he could be back in the squad by next match, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I'm going to end up buying Erling Haaland, it's probably going to come with the selling of another premium player who also blanked in game week one, and that was Chelsea's Cole Palmer. A lot of talk about Chelsea going into preseason. They won the Club World Cup. They looked good in their two preseason games, but failed to really create anything of note apart from a couple of very late chances, which fell to substitutes in this game. Both João Pedro and Palmer were the top two most owned players in game week one, and both failing to really register any sort of involvement in this fixture. I have to say, as a Chelsea fan, I'm a little bit concerned that Palmer was playing the position that we saw frustrate us so much at times last season, where he drifts out to that left-hand side, where he just looks much less comfortable and he looks more goal shy. He doesn't look like he's going to be scoring nearly as much in that position. And if that's going to continue, I don't really want him in my team. And I'm quite happy to say that. As a Chelsea fan, I think he's great. But if he's going to be playing out on that left-hand side, I don't think he's worth 10.5 million. And that's what we saw at the end of last season. We saw it in the Club World Cup, him move back to the right and look great. But I'm worried it's going to continue into the start of this season. I'm going to give him West Ham next week because, of course, they just conceded 3 to Sunderland. And I think it's a difficult sell before that. Yeah. But I've definitely gone off the captaincy on him this week because of what I saw.
I'm surprised to hear you say maybe he'd be the one you sell. But maybe it's doable. I've not looked at it. I think some will go Salah to Haaland. But yeah, it depends how the next few weeks go, I suppose. It's a funny old thing, football, isn't it? Like, if you'd asked me before the Club World Cup, who's the best team in the world right now? I would have said PSG. And then you go on to beat them 3-0 in the final. Like, Palmer runs the show, gets a brace, brilliant goals. João Pedro scores, and then it's 0-0 Palace game week one. Obviously, Colwell's picked up an injury. I think he's actually a massive loss. No Tosin as well, who some people were looking towards for 4.5 mil based on Maresca's comments. But yeah, he didn't make the squad in the end. And Eze free kick, he scored, but that was ruled out. That was kind of, yeah, big relief as a Sanchez owner and quite a swing in the end. In that game, Caicedo, Lacroix and Mitchell all hit the DEFCON threshold. I'm actually really liking the DEFCON's introduction to the game. Like, I think personally, it's like massively opened the game up in terms of the player pool, like which players you can now consider in your team. And it basically gives you more to cheer on every game. What are your initial thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree. I think it just widens that pool of players that we're able to pick from, right? Because I looked at that, you know, Crystal Palace game, and normally I'd go, right, I need Daniel Munoz in my team. But then I'm watching it and thinking, well, Lacroix, as you say, hit defensive contributions in this game, and I was really impressed with him. So now he's actually on my radar and he's slightly cheaper. So it's just that broadening of the amount of players that we're able to pick every single week, because, you know, your centre backs now have an extra route to points, so they can compete with some of those attacking fullbacks that we've got. I think in this game, if you've got Chelsea, let's wait and see how the West Ham game goes and then review after that. But I was really impressed by Crystal Palace, particularly defensively. So I will be looking, I think, over the next few weeks to maybe invest in them. They have Forest at home this week, then Villa away, but then it is Sunderland at home, West Ham away for them in game weeks 4 and 5. So whether it's a Chris Richards, whether it's a Lacroix, whether it's a Daniel Munoz, whether you start to look at, you know, Mateta or Sarr in midfield, depending on Eze's future, there are lots of options which are definitely on radar because they look like a team, and we saw in preseason they did play very well and that did reflect into this game. They look like a team that wants to hit the ground running early on.
Yeah, well, I'll have to see what happens when the window closes because it's the international break. Then it's Sunderland home. Like, if Eze, for example, leaves, there's been rumours of that, then I think I'd be a bit put off by the likes of Sarr, Mateta. Maybe Munoz would be the one for 5.5 mil. He's sort of like an extra midfielder anyway. Like, last season, only Trent had a higher XGI than Munoz, and obviously Trent's gone. So I really, really like Munoz, and I can see myself having him again this season. He was brilliant for me last season.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved owning him. Moving on to the final game on Sunday, Manchester United 0, Arsenal 1.
Yeah.
Talk us through this as an Arsenal fan, because I've got Bruno Fernandes in my team, and I think you do as well. And Man United did create a lot of chances in this game, and I take that as a bit of a positive that hopefully they end up in the back of the net in the future weeks.
Yeah, I think they deserve better, if I'm honest. And yeah, United fans seem to be about as happy as you can be after a loss, like given the improvement they've shown on last season, right? Like, you'd say Arsenal should be title contenders, and they gave us a real game. They came away with higher expected goals even. But yeah, finished 1-0 to the Gunners, and it was a debut to forget for Gyökeres, who did get the start in the end. We were wondering, would it be him? Would it be Havertz? He didn't register a shot. the last time he didn't register a shot or goal was when he was at Coventry. So that's going back quite a while. And Arteta took him off again, like seconds before the 60th minute mark. It's absolutely painful, these early pre-60 minute substitutions in game week one already. Three of Arsenal's last four goals against Man United have been corners. Yeah, and all of those actually were defenders that scored the goals, and all different defenders. It was Timber, and then it was Saliba. Then it was Calafiori that got the goal. One more stat for you. Arsenal have scored 31 goals from corners since the start of 23-24, which is 11 more than any team in the Premier League. Next most is Liverpool with 20. But anyway, long story short, I think I'm regretting no Arsenal defence a bit now. Like, they were the best defence for expected goals conceded last season, and they've got one game week one, lead time game week two. Did we make a mistake overlooking them?
I know, it was just that opening run of fixtures that we sort of decided that we could go against them, and all it would take is one clean sheet in one of the more difficult games, and suddenly they are going to be right up there. And once game week, I think seven rolls around, or six rolls around, where their fixtures start to look nicer, those people who have already gone in on, you know, a Gabriel, a Saliba, are going to be all over it, because we're all going to be looking to buy it. And, you know, Saliba is the one who hit defensive contributions in this game as well. So we've spoken all of pre-season that the Arsenal defenders are unlikely to hit it very much because they keep too much of the ball, which is probably what we will see. But game week one, Saliba walks away straight away with that and a bonus point as well. As you said, with corners, Declan Rice, he's the one who picked up in the assist in this game with his corner at just 6.5. He's got to be on radar as a bit of a sort of mainstay. If you want a player for the long term, he might not be as explosive as someone else at his price, but I feel like he's going to tick along nicely over the course of the season, and maybe he got overlooked as well.
Yeah, it's like a similar appeal to Anderson. Like, they both will get defensive contributions, and Rice has taken some corners, he's taken some free kicks, so he's got that going for him as well. Yeah, Bruno's one I'm going to have to monitor and sort of see what happens in this new-look Man United attack. Obviously, they've had a good window, let's be honest. They've signed Mbeumo, they've signed Cunha, Sesko, so it's a new-look attack. And I'm wondering how it's all going to fit together and what Bruno's role will be. Will it be as advanced as past seasons, or is he going to sit deeper, you know, with a defensive mid, Casemiro or Ugarte or whatever? And he's one of those as well. He fits in a very unique club where he's very good for goal involvements over a season, but he's also good for defensive contributions. Last season, he hit the threshold 11 times. So he's the only one really that's ticking both boxes. And of course, if he is playing deeper,
missed it by one.
And he missed it by one. Like, that's how close he came. So yeah, that's one I'm going to definitely have to monitor and just sort of see what happens and how involved he still is with the attack, or whether the reins are sort of going to be handed over to the other forwards now, Cunha and Mbeumo and Sesko, to score the goals and create them, with Bruno a bit deeper as a playmaker.
Yeah, I'm going to wait and see. I mean, they've got Fulham away, Burnley at home in the next two. So hopefully we see a little bit more from Bruno going forward in those couple of games. Just to wrap up very quickly on the Monday night game, Leeds versus Everton. I was very impressed with what we saw from Leeds, and I'm hoping that it can give me a little bit of false confidence that I don't have as much Arsenal investment in game week two, because that Leeds side played an awful lot better than maybe I expected from them. They, of course, got the penalty late on to win the game 1-0, but it was also Tarkowski, the real defensive contribution beast, that came away with 15 in this game. There are a couple of good defenders, cheap options like Goodmanson, who got 3 bonus points for Leeds at 4 million. A lot of people are having to look at. I think a lot of the investment in this game, though, was in Everton, actually. Mm. And there'll be a lot of disappointed people with the likes of Illiman Dye, Beto, Dewsbury Hall, and for a late clean sheet wipeout if you went on one of those defenders. How would you feel? I suppose we spoke about West Ham, that if you owned one of those who played a newly promoted team in game week one, you'd feel disappointed now. I don't feel like it's quite the same with Everton, because their fixtures are better.
Yeah.
And also, I just expect a little bit more from them.
Yeah, I think you can afford to wait. Brighton home next, that's not bad. They've got Wolves away game week three, that's not bad either. Yeah, Tarkowski hitting the defensive contributions threshold there. Last season, no one hit it more frequently than him. He did it in 66% of games. So I'm wondering actually if he could be just a set and forget defender, which feels a bit strange because I'm trying to like adjust how I look at FPL compared to previous seasons. I would never have Tarkowski for 5.5 million set and forget him, but he's the one that's going to hit DCs the most this season. I'm calling it everything. I'm saying defensive contributions, DEFCONs and DCs. I'm still working out what to call it. But yeah, he could be a potential set and forget. A disappointing blank from Ndai, But yeah, I think you have to stay patient with your Everton assets as well. I was impressed with Leeds though. There could be a lot of value there, like Goodmanson 4 mil, Rodon 4 mil. We're expecting Bior to probably start in left centre back from Gemic 2. He was suspended for Gemic 1. He's also 4 mil. So there's lots of 4 mil defenders like on the menu this season, isn't there?
Yeah, a lot of them are from the three newly promoted teams, but I would say I've seen more from them to be hopeful that some of those will be good picks than maybe we saw from all of the newly promoted teams last season. It'll be interesting to see whether that's just, you know, first game back in the Premier League at home under the lights, whether we see it continue. But yeah, I think some of those 4 million options from Sunderland, maybe Burnley, depending, you know, we've judged them on a Spurs game once they have Sunderland at home, whether we'll see improvements from them and from Leeds. I think those three are going to be, look like already they want to be competitive as well.
The last player that I wanted to briefly touch on was Dewsbury Hall. He's only 5 million. And I think although he blanked, he's probably the best midfielder in the game for 5 mil and under. He did blank, but he played as a 10 actually that game. I don't know if that will continue because of course they've signed Grealish. So we might see him playing deeper, but he's on corners. He's on the odd free kick. So he could be an interesting one as a super enabler. I don't know how comfortable I'd feel starting him every single week, especially if he does drop to a deeper role once Grealish breaks into the 11. But he looks like a nice option for 5 mil.
Yeah, I agree. I do like the 5.5s. They look like they've shown their value already in game week one. But I agree, if Dewsbury Hall is going to keep his place in that Everton team, he's taken a lot of set pieces. He looked pretty good. And actually, for underlying bonus, he was second for Everton. So if he does start picking up returns, there's likely to be some bonus points to go with it.
It's been really enjoyable kind of unwrapping and discussing the first game week of the season. It seems early to start issuing words of warning about European football, but Crystal Palace play their first Conference League match on Thursday evening. So if you're thinking about a transfer that involves Crystal Palace, then it might be wise to hold off until after that fixture.
It might, in theory, give Nottingham Forest a little bit of a boost as they go up against them in game week two. And we might see a little bit of fatigue with Palace entering into Europe for their first match. It's very easy to panic though and change your whole team after game week one. I am absolutely looking at a few of my players who blanked in the first week and thinking, were they bad picks or is it just a blank in 1 week? So let's try and have a little bit of patience. But of course, do keep an eye on price changes as you don't want to get priced out of any of your moves.
Kelly, Sam and Jules will be back on Thursday to talk you through game week two. And if you haven't already, please join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is as follows, XY6XPL.
Thanks everyone and good luck in game week two.